Right, we've got a change today to our scheduled programming.
Yeah, we were expecting to bring you a lovely interview with horror, sci-fi and fantasy comics writer Alec Worley for today's episode.
Yes, but then something quite exciting happened. And so we agreed with Alec that we'd bump him back one episode and do something a bit different.
The following podcast contains language. In fact, it's pretty much all words from here on in, so if you don't like words, I'd give it a miss. I mean, there's a bit of music, but most of that has words in too, so yeah.
So here's the story. Here's what happened. A few weeks back, we got an email from a fella.
Joshua.
Yeah, Joshua. And he said, could I send you a copy of my game? It's called The League of the Lexicon. I think you'll like it.
So basically, it's a quiz game that's all based on language and etymology and stuff like
Which obviously sounded right up our street.
Street being a word of West Germanic descent, coming originally from the Latin strata, meaning a paved road or a street, I suppose.
Street, yeah, it does mean street. Yeah. But isn't etymology just beautiful sometimes?
Isn't it? Yeah. So we said to Joshua, of course we'd like you to send us a free game. We'd love to have a go at it.
Definitely. And now we're not daft though, are we? We didn't shower yesterday.
Tom, is that? I'm not sure that's...
What?
I think you need to either stick with born yesterday or didn't come down in the last shower.
Maybe. Anyway, we weren't born in the last shower, were we? We've been around the advertising block a fair few times. So it's not like we were just going to fall for the fact that Joshua was obviously trying to use us just to promote his game, you know.
No.
Which we should mention would make a superb Christmas present for any language lover and is available to buy from several outlets, including Waterstones, right now.
Yes, but we thought before we do anything, we need to actually blum and play it, don't we? Because it might be rubbish.
It could be. But Joshua kindly sent us League of the Lexicon in the post, which must have cost a blooming fortune because it weighs an absolute ton.
It really does.
Loaded, yeah.
Give me a hernia. And yeah, so we arranged to give it a go.
Yeah, we roped in a friend to play with us and we thought it would be best to choose one of our... I mean, what's the word I'm looking for here, John?
Simple? Slow?
No,
dim?
I was just going to say, like, keen. I mean, like, keen. Like, it was keen to help us out and play. Yeah.
Oh, see, yeah, right. Yeah. Totally. Yeah, I was just joking.
And just to make it more confusing for everyone, he's also called John, isn't he? So
yes, but he's John. He's John with an H, though. Yeah. And I'm John without an H.
I'm not sure that's going to help people listening work out which John we're on about exactly, but...
But we do call him Johnny.
Yeah, but he also calls you Johnny sometimes, so...
Oh, yeah.
Anyway, it's probably all quite confusing, but nevertheless, here's how it went. So, first off, while we were getting set up, you thought you'd just, like, jump in, grab a question, and get stuck straight in, yeah?
Yeah, just a warm-up question, just so we could, you know, get a little feel for it.
Yeah.
Something carminative, Johnny, will likely do what? Will it A, calm the temper, B, cause sexual arousal, C, provoke argument, or D, relieve flatulence?
It's definitely D, relieve flatulence.
Relieve flatulence.
Oh, my God, he's going to be randomly good at this.
That was such a
carminative. Medicines are used to relieve and release flatulence.
I think I might
Natural carminatives include coriander.
Oh.
Did not know that.
I did not know that.
But does that mean, that it actually is releasing it? So that actually makes you more flatulent or...
Pops a bit more out.
Yeah. Licorice. Onion.
I'd imagine you have to be careful with the licorice, though.
What does that do?
Well, it's a laxative, isn't it?
Oh, is it?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. So it could release everything.
Yeah.
Orange and ginger.
Thank you.
So by my reckoning, that's, 26 seconds before you managed to get us talking toilet humour? I mean, that's got to be a record even for you, hasn't it, John?
Well, I think you're fine, Tom. Two things. One, it wasn't me, it was a question. And two, that isn't definitely not a record.
Probably isn't. Anyway, here's my quick and slightly incomplete guide on how to play The League of the Lexicon.
We need to pick a card. Pick a card.
Thank you, John.
So that's who you are.
Okay.
So you need to, it's got symbols on the bottom. If you answer a question right, you get to pick one of these cards, which also have a symbol on. You match all the symbols,
them.
You have to answer one question, and then you're the winner.
Cool.
So there's a die there.
One die, or is it a dice?
A die is one.
Is it?
Dice
is multiple.
You're going to be rubbish.
Yeah, he's already...
It's a die.
Is it?
You have to have more... Dice is the plural.
No, I thought it was the other way around.
Oh, my God. It's going to be a long game. Anyway, so you roll it, and that's your number, your question you get.
Mm-hmm.
When it says player's choice, that is the choice
of the player.
Yes, why did you take that away from me?
Sorry.
Yeah, you might be right about Johnny after all. I think you're... I mean, come on.
Well, I think that might actually be the same for all of us. Mm. Bearing in mind, we did decide that we'd take on the hardest box of questions.
Mm. So we're playing from the Trixie pack. Let's start on that.
Should we build up?
I think we should go straight in for it.
Do you?
And then retreat with our dignity and tatters.
Okay.
you think that'll be funny? You mentioned something about a kid's...
There is a kids one.
Should we maybe?
And there is we've got a slang edition as well, which is adults only, so we might be trying that one.
All right, brilliant.
But yeah.
Let's keep these close.
Yeah, we'll be needing those soon.
Yeah.
But no, we'll be fine. It can't be that hard, can it?
Nah, I doubt it.
Two, please, John. So if you can take off the top, because those are the ones I practiced.
Okay, yeah, perfect.
Thank you.
Okay, Tom, I think you're going to like this one. Okay, Thomas.
B. So- I haven't. No, go and read the question.
It is actually B. That is worrying.
What?
Was I holding that up?
No, was it?
Yeah, it was. So this is the meaning and more category. Thomas, where would one find a vomitory?
In something like a stadium. It's a,
do you want me to give you the... Oh, you're just going to go for it?
Oh, no, sorry. I didn't realise it was a choice. It's the exit route in a stadium.
Would you find it A, in the house of a Roman nobleman? B, in the tail of a comet? C, in a theatre? I'm guessing you're going for that one. Or D, in a submarine?
I'm going to say theatre, but I did like the sound of the first one.
You're right, it is a theatre or stadium. Yeah. You already knew the answer. Yeah. It's the entrance or exit through which large numbers of people can enter or leave.
So
well done, Thomas.
There's a card from the... there is a word for this, we should have checked, but got all the trinkets and... What's another? Artifacts.
Mm-hmm.
From the trinket box. Yeah, apologies to Joshua, we'll just be changing all the names of all the stuff he's worked so hard to put together.
Yeah.
So I've got my trinket.
What do you do with the trinket now, Tom?
I look at it and go, oh, it doesn't match any.
Maybe a bit of a false dawn there, Tom. Getting an easy first question.
What do you mean easy? It's only easy if you know the answer, isn't it? If you're smart enough to know the answer, then it's easy.
Well, that is true. That is true, Tom.
Well, now, speaking about smartness, it's time for Johnny's first question, which we didn't know at the time. This would become your most hated question format, John.
Oh, my God.
Roll the dice.
Die.
Number one. Question number one, please.
Name 10 herbs or spices that begin with C.
That's curly. Oh, that's
easy.
Curlica.
And is there a multiple choice offer?
Here's the first 10.
Okay. Coriander, chive.
Two.
Cilantro. Is that allowed? Because that's American for...
I'm going to allow that.
Are you?
Just for
Thank
lateral
you.
Thinking.
Yeah, it's nice. It's nice.
It's good because I think I'm probably out.
Come on.
Oh, come on. What's that? Three?
Come on.
She's only another seven to go.
Cilantro, coriander... Cumin.
Yeah.
That's another one.
Yeah.
Having that.
God, there's a lot he's got written down here. There's a lot in the answers.
Is there like,
there's like
more than
20
10?
Of them, yeah.
Is there?
Yeah.
I think sweet spices.
Don't stop giving him clues.
Oh, come on. Look at his little face.
His sweet spice is not helping.
It's time to feel
no,
like
I think I'm out. I think I'm out. Can I have you?
Four? Does he get something for
40% right?
Caraway?
Mm-hmm.
Catnip? Interesting.
Oh, whoa.
Okay.
Cayenne?
I was thinking of cinnamon.
Celery seed, chamomile, chervil, chicory, chili, Chinese five spice,
mm-hmm.
chives, clover, cloves, coriander, coriander seeds, cumin, curry leaves, curry powder.
Oh, curry.
Cinnamon would have been a good one. It's not even on the list, John. I would have probably given you a bonus point for that.
So that's a spice, isn't it, cinnamon?
It is.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It's the bark of a tree, isn't it?
Yeah,
cinnamon tree.
Go on, it's not QI. Crack
cinnamon
on.
Tree.
Roll the die.
So, time for you to have your first question, John.
Mm.
I wonder what sort of question you'll get.
Yes, let's see, shall we?
It's a strong start from me, I think.
Oh, I hate these ones. This is like the 10 of everything.
No, there's different ones. There's different things.
No, it'll be 10 of something.
No, it's different.
Number one. Name 5 words
That's five. It's not ten. So that's it's half five. As many. It's easy.
That's a good point.
Yeah.
Name five words.
Seems.
Oh, there's more to the question. This is tricky.
Seems
as well.
Fair. There's only five. Name five words with a similar meaning to ill, i.e., poorly. But obviously, you can't have poorly now because I've just given you that one. So
yeah,
five
poorly
words that aren't
poorly or unwell. But you can't use that one either because I've said it. Is that how it works?
We're sick. Saying, can't use sick.
Can't
either.
Use sick. Come on, five words.
Hang on. Can we stop saying words that mean poorly?
Name five words similar to ill.
Spewy. Peaky.
Oh, nice.
Parky.
That's
perky.
Perky. Those are pigs. These are a list
perky
of pigs.
Perky well, doesn't it?
Pokey. So one. That's five. I've got five.
At least three of them weren't right.
Vomitationary. Disease-ridden.
Disease. That's a good one.
I mean, I think the kind thing to do would be just say give in.
Yeah. I mean, obviously, I would have used the ones that you unwell,
yeah,
sick.
You would have got to three then, wouldn't you? What were the answers, John?
Answers might include afflicted, ailing.
Oh, you should have said that.
COVID-y. What?
That's a bit.
Diseased, you got that one, well done. Disordered, dying, which is quite...
Oh, wow, that's serious illness.
Really?
That, is serious
that
illness.
Was on the list?
That is a serious illness.
Enfeebled, feeble, fluey.
Oh, that's an obvious one.
Tell me when you want me to stop. Incapacitated, wasting, weak, woozy.
Yeah.
Woozy.
Wounded.
Woozy. There's a lot when you...
What was that one we had in the Limerick episode?
There's a lot when someone gives you the answers. What was, definitely.
Wambly.
Wambly in the tummy.
Should have said Wambly.
Oh, John.
We were having a right fun old time playing this, weren't we?
Yes. Yes, Tom, we were. Yes, very much so. If you can manage to roll something other than a one, the questions are a really good mix, aren't they? And you can often, to be fair, you can have quite a good educated guess too.
Yeah.
You know, if you're very smart and very well read.
Right,
obviously.
Where's this going? Is this leading up to a clip of you being a right smarty pants, is it, by any chance?
Might be.
Number four. Whose is the first recorded use of debauchery, extravagance, and enjoyable? Was it A, John Donne? Was it B, William Shakespeare? I've heard of him. Was it C, Sir Thomas More? Or D, John Milton?
Where was Thomas More?
Have you got that egg timer?
This is egg timer hooked up to like electrical shock equipment or something.
I mean, it's got to be shaky, hasn't it? He came up with so much.
Do you not
stuff.
Think that's he's put that in? That's,
I know,
that's the,
but then you feel like if you don't say it,
and then
it is
like, they don't sound Shakespearean.
Yeah, I mean, they're just normal words.
I like to think whoever invented them all in one like writing sentence.
Yeah, just in one sentence.
Yeah. Did debauchery and was like, oh, that's quite good.
I feel like there's a it's pushing me towards Milton as well because those words feel like they're
Milton-esque.
Yeah. But I feel like that's maybe a little bit of a, it's either a clue or a.
I'm going to trouble you for an answer at this point.
I would. I'd do the same. If I was in your shoes, Johnny, I'd be doing the same.
Because I've become a little
doing.
Bored now of you.
Yeah. I'm going to go Milton. I'm going to go with that little clue.
Good. I'm pleased about that because the answer is, in fact, John Milton.
Huh?
Milton was amongst the most prolific inventors of new words in the English language. Other words commonly credited to Milton include earth-shaking, lovelorn, fragrance, undesirable, criticise, and exhilarating.
I mean, it sounds impressive, doesn't it? But
it's just made up words. I mean,
he must have been living at a time when none of those words existed to make them up. If all those easy words don't exist...
True.
It's easy to come up with loads of new words, isn't it?
That's really.
It's hard now when there's all the words knocking around.
But
did you know
people thought at the time when they were just making up words and going, well, "What does that mean?"
Yeah.
Debauch. What was that?
In fairness to him, you probably had to be quite a well-known writer, didn't you, in order to
stick?
Because we could make up words, but no one's going to say them.
I mean,
you know about this, don't you, Tom? You know about this.
It's an enthusing thought, John.
Yeah, it is.
Oh yeah, very smart, John. Very smart. The thing is, though, when it's often. When it's your question and you're on the spot, it's a lot harder, isn't it? And everyone else thinks they know the answer.
That is very, very true. Yeah, that is very true.
Which is kind of what happened to me in this next one.
Player choice! What have we not had? We've not had a five, have we? Should we go for a five?
Yeah, go for a five.
Five.
Worldly wisdom.
Oh. Do you want to change your mind?
Maybe. You only need to name four.
Oh, come on!
So, dead easy, Tom. Basically, the easiest one of these we've had. Name four authors whose names...
I'm struggling already.
...have become adjectives. Go.
Dickens.
Dickensian, yeah.
Dickensian. Mm-hmm. Yeah, is that... You just look very blank then. I thought about the wrong end of the stick. That's right.
Yeah, I thought I was... Yeah.
Absolutely.
James. Jamesian that we did in the horror stories the other week, didn't I? I do pay attention, Josh.
You do?
When you waffle on about nonsense stuff. I do listen. Orwellian. Mm-hmm. That's used a lot, isn't it?
That's here. That's right on the card. Mm-hmm.
And, that's all the authors. Oh,
mentioned them before, didn't you? It was the famous one, wasn't it?
You only need one more, Tom. One more.
Oh, my mind's just completely blank. There must be so many.
Yeah, that's what happens.
And everyone else is there going, oh, come on, I can think of at least another two more. Blytonian? Blyton?
It probably is.
It should be. It could be. All you need to do is write a piece going, it's very Blytonian. There must be some really obvious ones.
Oh, there is.
There really is.
Tolkien-y?
Tolkienian.
Tolkienian. Well, that's good. Yeah, that sounds nice, isn't it? Dostoevsky-ish.
I love the way that you just jumped to like a Russian writer. Well, we have so many English writers that are really, really...
Shakespearean!
Hey! Billy Shakespeare.
Oh, right, yeah.
There you go.
Hey, you got there in the end, Tom.
I did.
Didn't you?
It was quite the adventure, wasn't it, though?
It was a bit, yeah.
A bit Blytonian, you could say, wasn't
nice.
It?
Nice.
A Blytonian, like Enid Blyton adventure. Yeah, it's like, good. Yeah. So what did you roll for the next question, John?
Well, Tom, it was a one. It was another bloody one.
Wonderful stuff.
Number one. Is this in a top 10?
Ready?
No.
How many do you want it to be?
I want it to be one.
It's 10. Name 10 words.
Oh,
name 10 words beginning with...
These are stupid.
Name 10 words beginning with butter.
Suffice to say, you didn't manage to get 10 buttery things.
No, I didn't.
At all. Anywhere near.
That's what happens when you roll a one. You get a silly list question.
Well, you say that, but not always.
That's a one. Oh, come on.
Give me the ten. Name 30 words. It's not even a list, John. It's not a list. What is the opposite of doughty? Brave, unaware, clever, or cowardly?
I reckon it would probably be helpful if I knew what the word meant.
Yeah, well, in essence, that would give you the answer.
Yeah, that would probably give me the answer. I'm going to go clever just because it seems like the obvious choice.
It's not, it's cowardly. Because a doughty person is brave, steadfast, and reliable.
Huh. Oh, so he rolls a one and he doesn't have to do a list of 10 things. How is that fair?
I don't know. It's not fair, John. It's not fair at all, but it is funny. That's the thing. Not fair, but it is quite funny.
Question, stupid list.
So at this point, we thought it might be a good time to swap to a different set of questions. Mm. So as well as the tricksy and the ticklish questions you get with the main game, so the tricksy are really hard ones, the ticklish are less hard, you also get like add-on packs. Mm. So there's kids' questions, there's a global edition, and the adults-only slang edition. Mm.
We seem to have dropped down in the artifact picking up.
Is it too late to go to the kids' version?
Well, we could try the adult slang edition.
Do it.
Yeah.
For adults only. Okay, what have you got, John?
Four. Don't tell me for this edition they moved.
It's all just lists. It's all lists.
They moved the listing.
It's lists all the way down.
World of slang.
Ah, that's better.
A camel, lizard, and lobster are associated with which sport? Cricket, athletics, swimming, horse racing. Camel, lizard, lobster.
Well, these questions are easy, aren't they? This is better.
It's easy for me, I know what the answer is.
Camel, lizard, lobster. Mm-hmm. I'm going to go swimming.
You sure? Final answer?
No.
What is your final answer?
I want to swap it.
Okay.
No, swimming. It's fine.
Okay. It's horse racing. But they're all slow and as such to be avoided at the bookies.
Hmm. Well, that didn't really change much in terms of getting questions right, did it?
No, it didn't. But hey, at least it wasn't a list, was it?
Well, that's true.
That's something. Yeah. That's something. Mm. I tell you what else is good about this game, John.
What's that, Tom? What's that?
That because of how the answers are nicely explained, you actually feel like, you know, you're learning something while you're playing, even when you're getting the questions wrong.
Yeah. I mean, if you know the answer, you can't really learn anything, can you? Do you know what I mean? You already know it.
Yeah, so you have to get the questions wrong to... Yeah, fair enough. You get the questions wrong, you learn. If you already know them, you already know them. You're not learning. But we must have learned a lot then on that score.
Yeah, definitely. What's been your favourite learn since playing the game? What's been your favourite... Like, just generally, like playing with the family and everything. Have you got a favourite fact?
Hey, I'll tell you one that is quite cool. Shall I read you the question?
Yeah, why not?
Siphon the pint. This is from the slang, adult slang edition, obviously.
I thought it might be when you started.
Siphon the python to urinate.
Mm-hmm.
William III, turd, and fun bags, breasts, were slang coined by which famous Australian?
Oh, wow, they're all from one person.
Yeah, that's why it's amazing. Isn't that good? Can you imagine being the person that came with all them?
My God, that is amazing. That is
amazing.
Was it
Barry Humphreys, Kathy Lett, Clive James, or Paul Hogan?
Ooh, they sound a bit Paul Hogan-ish, don't they?
Quite crude.
It's not, is it? Is it Kathy Lett?
No, darling, it's Barry Humphreys!
No way!
Yeah, Barry Humphreys.
Wow,
I mean,
that
he was
is...
a genius, wasn't he? He was very funny.
I mean, but, respect, yeah.
Also, Point Percy at the Porcelain. He did that. He came up with that. Technicolor yawn, which I'd never heard before.
Technicolor yawn at being vomiting, yeah.
being vomit. Oh,
that's good.
And apparently, according to this, fan-bloody-tastic.
What?
Well, I think you think that, and then if you think about him doing it in like the Dame Edna voice, you go, oh yeah, no, he probably did.
Well, now I'm thinking about it, it's really obvious, isn't it?
Yeah.
You can hear him say all of them.
But I just thought it was what a wonderful collection of...
Very good.
Yeah.
Wow, what a star. I've got one here for you, Tom. This is a bit more highbrow.
Is it? Even more? Well, okay.
But in one of the questions we got the other day, we got the etymology for buxom.
Ooh.
And I thought the original meaning of that is interesting, because it's not, as we now think of it, an adjective for a shapely female form.
I feel like it should be about horses.
Why horses?
I don't know. It just feels... like it should be about horses.
It should be a naval term, really, shouldn't it? Let's be honest. Do you know what it originally meant?
Is it horses?
No, Tom. Uh-huh. It originally meant obedient.
Oh, okay. Like a horse.
Like a horse.
Exactly. I am good at this. I am bloody good at this.
So you got there. You would have got there, wouldn't you? Via horse.
Yeah.
No, it came to us via the Proto-Indo-European route, berg, meaning to bend. Followed by som, which is obviously the word-forming element, meaning tending to, like you get at the end of handsome or gladsome or whatever.
Mm.
But you can still see its original meaning in the German word begsam, which means flexible. So they've kind of held on to their meaning.
Right.
But it's quite a leap, that, isn't it, from bendy to busty. But apparently the reason for the change is because of a sort of folk belief that healthily plump people were jolly and obliging.
Right, yeah.
You know how you say that you know, chunkier people are bubbly?
Yes.
And it's almost like Hollywood has kind of carried on that tradition. When they're casting films, you know, you get a chunkier person.
Yeah.
And they're always like the jolly, obliging people. And because of that association, the meaning changed slowly from around 1800. By the time we get to about 1950, the word buxom pretty much only means bosomy.
And 89% of the time is used in conjunction with the word wench, I believe.
It's true.
Wow. Facts.
I feel like that's a word that was used a lot in 90s men's magazines.
Yeah, it is, but and very much in kind of like medieval fiction.
Yeah.
Which is funny, because then it would obviously mean something completely different.
Yeah, it's true.
Ah,
yeah.
That buxom barmaid. She's quite obedient, isn't she? Yes, she is. Like a horse. Fascinating language, isn't it?
So, yeah. So there you go.
You've got to love those answers, I think. You know where you kind of, the etymology stuff, where you go, God, I never joined the dots on that. And it just, it kind of makes sense and you can see it. But unless you knew it, you don't know the ins and outs of it.
Yeah.
I love those. Love those.
No, totally. Although in the game when we were playing, there was the odd occasion when some of our group took a little bit of umbrage with the answers.
You mean Johnny didn't? Yeah. It's Johnny again, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah.
I've got a choice.
Number one is antique slang. Mm-hmm. Number two is 20th century. Mm-hmm. Number three is Gen XYZ. Number four is world of slang. And number five is slang soup.
I'm going to go for number five,
slang soup. I knew you would. Yeah, I like the sound of that. Gypsy Lee, Mother McCree, and Split Pea, a Cockney rhyming slang for what?
A cup of tea.
Knee.
Oh.
Tea, whiskey, or TV?
It's a cup of Rosie Lee, isn't it, for tea? It's not Gypsy Lee, is it? Rosie Lee.
Same or different. Yeah, it is Rosie Lee. Well, you have to do it. You have to do it. Oh, me split peas are killing me.
I reckon it is knee, it you knees? Know. Yeah, I think it is knee. Split peas, knees.
See what's on the old Mother McCree.
Telly, you know, it's not telly. It could be a cup of tea, but if it is, I'm going to have...
What are you going to go for?
Well, I was... knee.
The answer is tea.
No, it's not. I'm going to take this up with your man. Because that's Rosie Lee.
Other rhyming slang terms for the Great British Cuppa include Betty Lee, Georgie Bohee, Glory Bee, Hayley, Peters and Lee, Sailors on the Sea, Sweetie, Wasp and Bee, and You and Me.
And not Rosie Lee.
And Rosie Lee as well, I assume.
Harsh. He couldn't Adam and Eve it, could he?
No, he couldn't, Tom.
Oh,
they,
dear.
I mean, they can't have all the answers on the cards for questions that have a load of potential answers, though, can they?
No, they can't, mate. That's a Sunday lunch, isn't it?
What?
Sunday lunch. Beef joint. Good point.
You just made that up, didn't you, Tom?
Slang. Yeah, no, I might have done a little bit, yeah.
Yeah. Okay, can we stop it with the old Simon Wang now, please?
Yeah, can. Hang on. Have you just made that up?
Yeah, might have
done. You can't just make rhyming slang up. You're coming across as, like, totally deep, man.
Oh, thanks.
No. Don't thank me yet.
Twah.
Oh, which historical figure might a Gen Zer call deep? Is it A, Captain Edward Smith, captain of the Titanic? That's a bit cruel.
Davy
Crockett,
sea.
American folk hero. C, P.T. Barnum, showman. Or D, John Gotti Jr., mafia don.
He sounds
pretty deep, doesn't he? I'd go with him.
Yeah.
I'd go with him. I'd do that.
Oh, no. It's what? A, Captain Edward Smith, Captain of the Titanic.
No, it's not. People who
deep,
drowned.
Deep meaning, because I would think deep means something who's a bit cool, a bit edgy, yeah. But actually deep means foolhardy, stupid, rash, and otherwise misjudged.
So, hold on. We should point out that question isn't actually as ironically funny as we thought, John.
Why is that?
Well, if you actually look at the card, it was derp, not deep. Johnny just read it wrong.
Is that really true?
That is true.
What a total derp.
Yes, he is a derp. He's not deep. He's a derp.
That's amazing.
I know. Unbelievable. I would have made the whole Titanic thing not ironic and funny at all. But
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow. So Johnny just wasn't wearing his glasses.
pretty much.
That's brilliant. So Tommy, listen, if you were doing one of these questions,
yeah,
what question would you write?
Right, okay. Shall I ask you it now?
Yeah.
Name 10 things.
No, you're not allowed.
Kidding, calm down. Kidding, calm down.
Fine.
Which is the odd one out, John? Bungalow, banjo, jungle, or dinghy?
I haven't got a clue. Jungle.
Banjo is the odd one out because it's the only word of African origin. All the others are from...
No idea.
The Indian.
Really? Bungalow?
Yeah, that's the one I thought would give it away.
Really?
I thought everyone knew that bungalow was from India.
No, Tom.
Really?
I don't think they do.
I thought jungle was going to be the one that was the... Because jungle sounds African.
Yeah, maybe. And what was the last word again?
Dinghy, like a little boat.
Dinghy, yeah.
Yeah.
Very good, Tom. I like that. Mm. Very good.
What have you got?
I've got one for you.
Yeah, go on.
Squirrel.
Oh, yeah.
Is obviously from the Greek skioros.
Obviously.
Meaning shadow-tailed.
Yeah.
You knew that anyway.
I was going to say that, yeah.
But the old English word for squirrel is aquiorna. What is aquiorna's literal translation? is it glove fur, nut nibbler, oak protrusion, or acorn thief?
I'm going to go for... what was the word? What was it? What, I just want to hear the word.
Acquiorna. You're doing a John here. I have to put a timer on you.
Yeah, I'm going to... Shall I spend 10 minutes talking about each of the possible answers and why it could be that?
You exaggerate, of course.
And then just go for the first one that I thought it would be anyway. Honestly, I don't know. I want it to be like acorn thief, but I think glove... Let's go glove fur.
Is the wrong answer.
Oh.
It's oak protrusion.
Wow.
You're obviously aware that the name of the oak tree's genus is Quercus, which comes from the Proto-Indo-European Quirkwoo, and Acquiorna is the little clue
in
there.
Anything like it?
But interestingly, if you had said acorn thief, you wouldn't be like a million miles away, because the word acorn's from the same root.
Uh-huh.
In fact, Tom, interesting fact here, the name for a squirrel in Dutch is eekhoorn.
Wow.
Do you know what I mean? It's a bit weird, isn't it? But then I suppose they're both sort of the answer, which is oak protrusion, which sort of makes sense. They're both protrude from oaks. So there you go. You've learned something.
Well, that's it, isn't it? That's the thing. We learn something.
Yeah, we move on.
We do. Let's get back to the game. And I think the next question was the one we'd all been waiting for.
Ah, yes. I mean, when it says adults only on the box, you want a bit of blue, don't you?
Oh, abso-bloody-lutely.
Number one, please.
Oh, I was about to celebrate because you got a number one, but it's
all right now. It's Gen Z's.
Oh, my goodness me. Antique slang. In Victorian.
Me.
Pornography. In Victorian pornography, what was... Gamma-hooching.
Okay.
Was it A, anilingus, B, ear-licking, C, fellatio, or D, toe-sucking?
It is, in fact, toe-sucking, he says, with confidence.
Confidence there.
Very.
It's fellatio. So that sucks, doesn't it? etymology, not known. It's just from French.
Yeah.
It's obviously the French.
So that was us playing the game.
It was, and it's fair to say we really enjoyed it, genuinely.
We did.
Yeah.
Hope you enjoyed it too. It's a very well thought out, and it is a very beautifully designed game as well.
It is. So I think it's a good time now that we have a chat with the fella that did all that thinking out and beautiful designing. We have a chat with Joshua Blackburn, the actual creator of the League of the Lexicon. If you want to play the game, gotta be in it to win it. Even if there's 10 things to name, it shouldn't take more than a minute. Wanna know what words Milton coined with Tom and Johnny and Sexy John? Then why don't you come and join the League of the Lexicon? Can I, before we start, Joshua, when we were just finalising, did you see the emails, John? When we were finalising the thing, Joshua thought he was being funny and sent a picture of a date to say it's a date. So I sent back a picture of Mystic Meg, meaning I'm looking forward to it. But then I don't know if Joshua wasn't quite sure whether things had been understood, because then he sent another email that just said, it's a date. As if
I found your Mystic Meg picture to be a bit confusing.
Yeah.
I found it to be open to interpretation.
Well, I wanted it to be challenging. I felt that we owed you that after the jiggery pokey that's gone on with us playing your game and the question, some of the questions in there.
Yeah.
Do you know how I took that, the Mystic Meg picture?
Yeah. Mm.
Joshua sent us an email literally just before we played the game.
Oh, yeah. That could be the other meaning of the Mystic Meg.
That was weird.
It was open to interpretation.
Yeah.
And I didn't want there to be any ambiguity.
Yes, exactly.
That what I'd sent you was a date.
Because it could have looked like a little poo, couldn't it, or something? And we might have thought,
it could look like a little
shriveled
poo.
What's he saying?
That could be shriveled confusing poo. People. What? That's a weird way to kick things off, isn't it?
Yeah.
Looking forward to talking. Here's a picture of little shit.
But you emailed us about literally like 5 minutes before we kicked off our little gaming session. That was a bit weird.
And how did you get it? It's, you know what? I send the game out to people, and even though we have had like really lovely things about said about it. I always worry, are they going to enjoy it? Did they like it? So it always makes me feel really happy when people get back and just like, yeah, we had a great time with it, because that's what it's all about. But before I sent that, I was just like, I hope they liked it after all of this.
We did like it. We enjoyed it a lot. We ended up playing it for a bit longer than we planned.
Excellent.
And was actually late going out to the pub. So, I mean, that's
true.
High praise indeed.
I mean, I want to say that I found it excruciating.
John does have a little bit of a chip on his shoulder about one specific type of question.
Which type of question?
Yeah. Well, I'll phrase it as a question, Joshua. I'd like you to give me 10 reasons why you have a category where you have to name 10 things, and your time starts now. No, seriously.
What
is it about that category? I think it's, to be fair, I think some people are very good at that.
Yeah.
It was a lot of fun for everyone else because they got to laugh.
I think the other thing is you kept rolling a one. It wasn't even like it was occasionally. You like got like four or five in a row, and it's like name eight things. My god!
Yeah.
I just blank at stuff like that. My mind just empties.
Absolutely. And when I'm writing the questions, I'm just like, oh, this one's going to be easy. I've got like 40 different options for them. They could choose any 10 of these. But I know that when you're actually thinking about them, it becomes a lot harder. But the short answer is that part of the process of game development is endlessly playtesting, taking it to people and just kind of like playing it, seeing what they say, what do they like, what do they not like. And those category questions, people loved. People always really enjoyed playing them.
Wow.
I think it's because there's a lottery feel to it, isn't there? In that you feel like you can do it, even if it's tricky or there's a thing. It feels doable.
Yeah. It's not doable.
For a lot of people, it is, John. But for other questions, you either kind of know it or you don't.
It would be good if we got our own back on Joshua and we asked him a couple of really tricky questions from his own game, put him on the spot. What do you think of that, Joshua? Do you reckon you could?
He'll know all of them now.
Like something from the name 10 things category.
No, you know what? I know what you're trying to do. I get it. It's called a taste of your own medicine.
It's called revenge, Joshua.
I get that. And people that feel defeated and frustrated themselves like to get their own back. And that's absolutely fine. But I'm man enough to take it. But I make no promises.
Well, let's give you one to start with, and we'll just see how you get on.
Oh shitbox! You're literally going to do it now. Okay. Fine.
And fine. Yeah, no cheating. No looking on Google. Name me 10 poetry forms. Go.
I feel like I should do the traditional what everyone else does. I can think of a few.
Yeah.
That's what happens while you're playing the game, doesn't it? The person who isn't doing the question, who isn't answering the question.
Because you're not being asked it, yeah.
Sonnet, limerick, blank verse.
We'd just like to make it clear at this point, Joshua obviously very quickly, expertly and impressively listed off a load more forms of poetry without so much as a moment of hesitation, taking him to 10 in record time.
Why have you got me reading this? He only managed 3.
We'll edit that back in later and make you look really smart. Yeah, we'll do that.
Yeah.
That's much better.
I'm not very good at quizzes.
All right.
I think I don't like. It sounds weird to say. I don't like the competitiveness of them.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. It provokes a bit of a reaction with me. It's too competitive for my liking.
Oh, that's interesting.
I like people to get on, and that's been one of the interesting things about the game is that it is a competitive game, but also I've noticed that a lot of people like to play it collaboratively as well.
Yes. The first time I played it, that's how my family played it.
So you're talking about those category questions, and actually frequently everybody gets involved.
Yeah.
They all kind of like get stuck in trying to come up with answers.
Yeah.
And I like that. I think that's there's been a bit of a swing away from competitive board games and into more kind of collaborative styles of play.
Yeah, that's really true. That never used to be a thing, did it?
No, no.
But so many games now are there, you know, the whole team of you have to
absolutely
try and resolve something. Yeah, that's interesting.
Well, you remember ads on TV like back in the 80s and stuff when everything was like rah rah. It's like if you can win, and it was about winning and like rubbing the other person's face in the dirt. Do you remember you buy a board game, it'd literally be like a pack of dirt that came with it that you could rub the losers' faces in because you're the winner. Yeah, that's how they'd all be, wasn't it? Even like Hungry Hippos and stuff.
I have to say though, when we were playing this game, it was a very sort of jolly experience, wasn't it? It didn't feel like we were going for each other's throats. And maybe that's because it was actually it's actually quite difficult. In a good way.
Yeah.
But what's great about it as well is that most questions you can have a go at, like there'll be a clue in there somewhere. You know, you can make an educated guess a lot of the time.
You can get halfway there.
And I like questions like that.
One of the challenges that we faced about how hard to pitch the questions, and the thing is that when you play a game of Scrabble, it kind of finds its own level with whoever you're playing with. If you have two 10-year-olds playing Scrabble, but they get on fine playing it because they play at a 10-year-old level. If you have two Scrabble grandmasters playing it, it becomes a different game, but with all the same components.
Yeah.
For a quiz, you set the difficulty.
Yeah.
And it was always a dilemma about how hard should you make the questions. And that's actually one reason why we have the two difficulty levels, because we wanted to make it more inclusive.
Yeah, I was going to say, with the two different packs and the additional packs, it was a good handicap system and it really equaled it out perfectly. It really did.
Perfect. Well, that's as it should be, because this was one of the big things for us, that language can feel quite exclusive to people. You don't know these words. You don't know the code to be a member of this.
This is too fancy thinking for you.
Absolutely. And that is, we want to create something that really challenged that and that was very much about, look, words and language for everybody. This is a really, really fascinating, joyous subject just to play around in. And it's not just for your brilliantly clever aunt or uncle. It's for your 10-year-old or you or whoever to have fun and just mess around with. The one thing that we were clear about was that challenging questions were fine, but it had to be interesting.
Yeah.
And you had to play a question. And even if you didn't know the answer, when you found it out, you'd be kind of like, okay, that's interesting.
Yeah. I was going to say the answers are really good because they're not just the answer. They actually explain in a really good way, you know, what the word means or what its origin is or whatever. It's very nicely put together.
I'm really pleased because that, again, was a really big deal for us, because you have a game like Trivial Pursuit, question, answer.
Yeah.
You don't actually end the game awful lot smarter.
No, exactly.
Than when you started. Whereas with this game, it was a really big deal that we wanted full answers. So that if you didn't know it, you would finish the game smarter and more informed than when you started.
Yeah, we never knew what gamma hutching was before, did we, Tom?
I don't think we needed to.
Maybe we didn't need to.
I still don't think we need to.
You need to remind me what it means.
It's a bit of a mouthful.
How did you become interested in etymology and words and language and stuff? Where did that interest originate?
I have a small amount of imposter syndrome with the whole thing because I'm not an etymologist. I'm not a lexicographer. I didn't do English at university. I've been running an art gallery for like the last 8 years, selling art to interior designers. I'm a photographer. Mm. And so this is not been what my life has been dedicated to.
Wow, big learning curve.
Huge learning curve, like crazy learning curve.
Yeah.
But what I am is I'm just quite a curious person.
Mm.
And I am curious about words and language. Why do we say this? Where did that word come from? Why do we write like this? How is these languages different? It is one of those subjects that invites curiosity.
Yeah, definitely.
I mean, really, the genesis of it all was during the COVID lockdown and doing homeschooling with my two boys.
Mm.
I was just really, really depressed by what they were being sent from school for their English.
Right.
It was just comprehension exercises and spelling and grammar tests and just really joyless stuff.
I mean, you don't want to inspire the youngsters, though, with a spark learning.
No, indeed.
You want to keep them on the straight and narrow so you can tick those boxes. Because the last thing you want is them getting excited about it and getting distracted by something.
But to that extent, the school was doing a great job.
Brilliant stuff.
But I found it quite boring.
Yeah.
And I was just trying to make them more curious about words and language. And so that was where the game kind of started, creating little quizzes for them.
Right.
To just make them wonder more and derive more wonder from the language that we use. And it just kind of grew from there.
David, age 8, what does gamma hutching mean?
It must have taken a long time to put it all together. And I'm guessing there were lots of people involved in that as well. You must have got help from plenty of people.
It took a crazy amount of time. And, I mean, you've only got the question cards, the questions that made it into the pack.
Of course. Yeah. And it's a massive box as well. It's not just you know, a little skinny box. It is a big old thing.
So, I mean, there are 2,000 questions in the main game and then another 1,500 for the special editions.
Wow.
But I would say that you could probably add another 300 or 400 questions that were written and just went to the bin.
So in terms of the people helping you, who did you kind of bring in to help write them?
So making a game is a very high risk thing to do. It's kind of, there are so many games that do not make it. And I decided early on that if I was serious about trying to make this thing, then I needed to get like every single aspect of it absolutely as high quality as I could. And so that's why they kind of like the design and the production and all of the rest of it. But it also meant that the actual question writing also needed to be amazing.
Yeah.
And I started contacting linguists and lexicographers and authors and dictionary editors around the world, inviting them to contribute questions to the game. And that was really, really cool because I started getting input from people who were absolutely top of the game when it came to the study or definition or writing about words and language. And I worked with some writers as well.
Oh, yeah.
And it was good. It was... I ended up doing more of the writing than I expected to do.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that's because I turned out to be quite picky about what I wanted.
Right, yeah.
I think
you
that's
had a sense of...
I think I had a sense as to the style and the tone and the content that I felt worked. Mm. And I think that's a nice way of saying I was probably a nightmare to work for.
Micromanaging.
A massive, wordy lexicon diva. Which is
exactly,
fine. It's your thing.
Like
it's your thing.
Yeah.
So at what point in this process did it go from being a germ of an idea to something you'd mocked up in your shed to actually pitching it and getting it moved forward?
I was taking baby steps with it. I didn't want to go bananas with it.
Yeah.
So I think I first decided, okay, I'm going to create 60 question cards and work out some basic ideas for the artwork and for the packaging design and just start playing it with people and just see what they think. And I think early on, I had a strong feeling that this had something. And it was actually like, I think March last year, I was getting somebody a present in Waterstones in Piccadilly. And I happened to have a prototype of the game with me. And I just thought, you know what, I'm just going to speak to whoever buys games here and just ask him what he thinks about it. Does it, not try and sell it to him, but just kind of, I'd be interested, is this something you'd ever take?
Bit of feedback and
I was in the store and I waited for about an hour for this guy to appear, and he was super friendly and he gave me 10 minutes of his time. Honestly, he got it immediately, really liked it, pushed it kind of like upstairs, so to speak, to the the games buyers in central office. And within 6 weeks, they'd ordered 5,000 copies.
Whoa.
And that was from a prototype.
Wow.
And that was crazy.
That was all hands to the pump at that stage, presumably. You had to then actually create a game.
It was honestly a massive punt for Waterstones to do that. And when I talk to people about this, I'm at pains to kind of say that this is not how Waterstones normally buys its games.
Don't take your ideas into the shop and...
They aren't buying games from... Well, no, maybe do, but I think it was like a very crazy state of affairs. I think that even they were a little bit shocked that they had done that.
Well, I think that's testament to the quality of the game, to be
fair. That was a great vote of confidence for us. And as you say, it was all hands to the pump at that point. And then we... was still committed to doing our Kickstarter launch as well.
Oh, yeah.
It's doing Kickstarter is a massive punt. You can scrape by and raise like £15,000, or you can become like an exploding kittens. And you never really know what is the secret sauce that makes it happen. But it launched. We'd actually just had Stephen Fry tweet something really nice about the game.
That's helpful.
Which was helpful. And Susie Dent had also said really nice things about the game.
Oh, nice.
And in 3 weeks, it went from launching to becoming the most successful word game in Kickstarter history.
Wow.
Yeah, it was making my head spin just seeing the backer numbers coming in and seeing this game where I had been hoping that the bar... at launch was, I hope we don't embarrass ourselves, became like, oh my God, this is absolutely taken off. It's been crazy watching it. And it's so cool seeing it in a bookstore because that actually is...
Yeah. It's like that's where it belongs, isn't
that's
it?
That's where it belongs.
That's its natural habitat.
I'm actually not bothered about hobby gamers.
Yeah.
My market is book lovers, word lovers, and they go to bookshops. And so bookstores are where the game belongs and where I hope it will continue to do well.
This is the Failing Writers Podcast. Enjoying it? Well, it'd be rather nice if you could take the time to leave us a review or give us a mention on social media or hijack a bus and force everyone on the bus to listen to every single episode we've ever made before you let them go. Like the film Speed. But without Keanu Reeves. And a bomb. And with reviews.
Is there a question that you're most proud of? Have you got a favourite question?
Name 10 things.
Oh, God. I definitely like the questions that make me laugh.
Yeah. Can you think of any of your favourites? I'm putting you on the spot again.
You are putting me on the spot. I like the questions where the answer options make me laugh.
Yes.
And I remember that there's a question about irony.
Oh, yes.
Where... I'm just like, which of these is not an example of irony? And I was rather pleased with one of the answer options being rain on your wedding day, which made me giggle to myself.
Yeah, no, we got that question when I was playing with the family. And then I didn't know whether that should actually be the answer, because that
would be
in itself that's actually ironic. To the point where people started saying things like, Dad, just shut up. We're just doing the next question. Seriously.
I think it might provoke that. I like the tricksy ones. Which dish is made from the animal it claims to be? Scotch woodcock, Welsh rarebit, Cape Cod turkey, beef Manhattan. I like ones like that are just like, oh, that's a little bit tricksy.
We got one about the tannoy.
Oh, yeah.
What is the origin of tannoy in a tannoy speaker system?
It's the name of the company that produced them.
Is it A, Tannoy's inventor, Sir Sidney Tannoy, in 1938? Was it Tannoy's key material, tantalum alloy? Was it Tannoy's first factory near Tannoy in northwest France? Or Tannoy was an invented name that sounded futuristic?
I'm going to go for D.
Oh, my God!
I liked A.
It's neither. It's its key material, tantalum alloy.
Come on,
that sounded like the most made up.
That just totally ridiculous. Did.
In fact, when I was reading it, I was thinking, "Ah, kudos to you, Joshua, for making that up. That's good."
Yeah.
Tannoy was trademarked in 1928 became widely associated with the public address system they manufactured.
And it was good because we went into it, I got the question, and I thought, I'll probably know this because I know that's actually a trade name that's become ubiquitous.
Yeah, yeah.
So, oh no, several of these answers could still mean that's the case. I have no idea. And then it turns out that some funky metal that it's made out of, which no one's ever heard of.
Yeah.
I came out learning more. I learned something. Yeah. I learned something. I'm probably hating the person that put the questions together a little bit more than I did. But I definitely learned
something. I love stuff like that. I'm a proper nerd when it comes to stuff like that. If it gives you some new information, then it's definitely a winner for me.
And if you find after you've played it a few times, you've kind of exhausted yourself because you know all of the questions, then if that is the case, you will have accumulated an insane quantity of knowledge.
It's true.
Yeah.
It is a little mini encyclopedia of stuff, but just with the encyclopedia in the form of questions.
Mm. Yeah. In terms of the board game world, then, that you are now ensconced in, whether you like it or not, and obviously it's coming up to Christmas and everyone should buy a copy of League of Lexicon for their loved ones and family members this Christmas.
And people they hate.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, if you know anyone that dislikes having to think of 10 of something,
absolutely.
Buy them it and buy them also a die that's only got the number 1 on it on all surfaces. That would really, really help. But in terms of sort of sales numbers for board games these days, he says, like he knows what they used to be. What would be a good number of sales?
I don't think I can give you a hard number for that. I mean, I've got no idea. For instance, like Wingspan that came out a few years ago, which was absolutely massive. I mean, they must have been shifting like hundreds of thousands of units, I would have thought, around the world. So, I mean, that's a massive game. Something like Exploding Kittens. I mean, they're shifting hundreds of thousands, if not millions of units. Something like this, honestly, we've done incredibly well with how many we have sold through Waterstones and Barnes & Noble, and it's now on Amazon.com, but not for sale in the UK. We've done crazy well for an indie publisher with a debut game, and we're now on our fourth print run.
Wow!
For the main game, and that is certainly it's doing well. I think the board game world is a very fast growing kind of area at the moment. They did really well over the pandemic. And you only have to go into Waterstones and see the quantity of games that they are selling.
It seems counterintuitive in a way to me, because obviously video games are so addictive now. But do you think a lot of the time it's parents going, come on, come off there. Come on, come and play this instead.
No, I think that, I mean, this is one of the things that gets me excited about games. Games do bring people together in a very real way. An analog sense. And that actually was a really big deal to me, because as a parent, I actually am really concerned about screen time and digital addiction.
Yeah.
I mean, I jokingly refer to myself as analog dad, but I love analog. I love the physicality of things, anything that brings people into the same real space to share something in real time, in real life. I value that. And I think that board games, that is their territory.
Yeah.
And the success of board games is a reflection of the fact that people still want that kind of contact and engagement and kind of like human interaction.
It's encouraging, that, isn't it?
it is, and it's something that definitely gets me excited about this space. And I've had a lot of people saying, are you going to do a digital edition? Is there going to be an app? And I've really kind of dug in my heels, because I've for me, one of the points of the game was, this is analog, and it's proud to be analog. And it makes it much more complicated for me being analog.
Yeah,
but I wanted something that was very kind of Ludditely analog in that sense.
Well, well done for digging your heels in.
Thank you.
Because I think it works really nicely. I mean, we wouldn't have had anything like the experience, the three of us sat round the other day, if, you know, we'd been sat on our phones. It's not quite the same, is it?
No, there is some.
But it is really great. So congratulations, Joshua. I think you've created something very beautiful.
Yeah, it is. It is. It is really.
Thank you. I am super proud of the game. I'm really excited about the special editions. And actually, we've just signed Paul Anthony Jones from Haggard Hawks to do our next special edition.
Fantastic.
Right, that's good. I mean, he was too busy. We asked him to come and play this with us, and he was too busy. So that's nice. He could find time for you.
Yeah, so he's going to be doing a genius edition for us for next year. Oh,
great. Well, I'm glad he didn't turn up then, actually.
Yeah.
With his genius edition. No, thank you.
Name 10 things. I can name 20. All right, Paul. Back in your box.
Well, look, I'm really thrilled that you like it, because actually that is the thing that gives me the biggest buzz about any of this, is when people have had a good time playing it. That's what it's all about.
And I think we should just have a quick mention of the book that you released, the photography book. Can you tell us about that? Just so I can say, well, that's ridiculously ridiculous and brilliant.
Yeah, so I have a book published by Hoxton Mini Press that is about London's laundrettes.
Well, that's ridiculously brilliant.
And I've visited every laundrette in London. 435 laundrettes. And I photographed every sobbing one of them.
Wow.
And yeah, that is ridiculous. But it was also, it was awesome. It was amazing. Because it was a voyage around London told through the medium of the laundrette.
What drew you to laundrettes in particular?
I love laundrettes. I love them aesthetically. I love the geometry. I love the colours. I love them socially, the way that they bring people together, and to kind of like the communities and the people that you find inside laundrettes. I love the smell of them. I love the sound of them. I've got a white noise machine on my phone that I listen to when I'm trying to concentrate. And the noise I inevitably put on is the sound of a tumble dryer.
Right.
Okay, I'm appreciating that it's making me sound a little bit weird.
Yep.
You know what? I'm okay with that.
That's good. That's good. So are we right in thinking then, released now, that the next board game will be a laundrette-based board game?
If I could find a way to do it.
If
I could make it work, I would. But, I mean, making the book, it made me realise, I suppose it kind of connected me to other laundrette lovers. And you know what? You boys can scoff as much as you like. And I know that there is scoffing happening. And I'm okay with that. You can scoff as much as you like. I know I'm not alone.
Yeah, well, right. Yeah.
I know that there are laundrette aficionados out there.
Laundrette forums.
Yeah, laundrette forums. People who are nodding their heads and saying, yeah, you know what? I love laundrettes too. And yeah, there's nothing to laugh about here. This is a serious subject.
No, absolutely not. No, absolutely
you're right.
Not.
You're right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Gosh, I'm actually thinking about going to a laundrette now just to calm down.
You should do, just to chill out, just to
just to chill. I do find them quite calming places to be. I really do.
Yeah.
But look, I can only thank you as well for getting me on the show, and I'm sure that I can trust you that you won't edit this in such a way that I look foolish. Or look like I don't know the answers to my own questions, or that I know less than 15 poetry forms, which I gave you the full list. I don't know the answers to my own questions. I know less than 2 poetry forms. I'm foolish. So if you have edited it such that it only looks like I know 2 or 3 poetry forms, then shame on you. Shame on you is all I can say.
Whatever we do do with the edit, people, our listeners, are very well aware that we don't back anything that we don't actually believe in. So when we say go out and buy the game, it's really good, they will know that we actually do mean that. And hopefully some of them will actually go out and buy the game because it is really good.
Awesome.
Don't buy the book about laundrettes, though.
I would add to that as well that we are making new games and we do want people to contribute questions to the game.
Oh, that's good.
Ooh.
So if you are interested, and this is a big thing for us, this community of people around the game. If you do like the game and if you are interested in contributing questions to it, then if you go on to the writer's room section of our website, you'll see how to do it.
Oh, amazing.
Brilliant. Oh, that's a fun thing.
That does sound fun. We might have to do that, Tommy.
Yeah.
Definitely. You might even write a good enough question to get included.
I doubt it, but we'll try.
Who invented the word enthricing?
That's good.
We can do that one, can't we?
I know the answer to that as well, so that's good.
Joshua, thank you so much for your time, and thank you for sending us a game, and thank you for thinking of the game in the first place.
Well,
because without that,
fantastic. Really appreciate
thank you for having me. I'm delighted that you enjoyed it.
Do you know what I'm slightly nervous about, Tom, doing this episode? I feel like people will assume that we're being paid to put out what is effectively an hour-long advert for a board game.
We just liked it. He sent it in and we liked it. And he seems like a nice chap.
We genuinely did. Yeah. We genuinely really liked it. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
We liked the concept and we thought we'd do our bit to promote it, didn't we? Because we think it's great. Simple as that. Hang on, do you think we should be getting paid?
We're very naive here, aren't
Maybe
we?
We're just being stupid. But no, the game is very good. Do you know what my favourite bit of the game is, Tom?
Sorry, that's just me resisting saying, is it answering lists of things? But it's not. I don't know. What is your favourite bit?
It's asking the questions, isn't it? It's that feeling when you're holding the card and you're asking the question. It's such a beautiful position of power, isn't it?
Power, yeah.
Feel so smug. I suspect there's a few listeners out there who are feeling a similar thing and they're probably thinking, oh, I reckon I could do better than them. Well, do you know what? If you think you're so clever, why don't you show us, eh? Because we have a little competition, don't we, Tommy?
Yes, they can. They can actually show us. Joshua very kindly has put together a little online version with a handful of questions that you can go on and answer. And it will let you know how many out of nine, I think there's nine questions on
there.
Yeah,
nine questions.
How many you get? Myself and John both got six. I should have got seven, actually. I misread one of the questions.
Oh, here we go. Go on.
I always do that, though. I did the same in the thing with you.
Did you read deep when it was derp?
No, I'm not that stupid, no. It was like one of those where, which of these is not a such and such?
Yes.
And for some reason, I just completely missed that. Mm. And then latch onto something, think, oh, well, that definitely is, so it's not that one. And then it's like, oh, no, that's the answer. Anyway, so I got, well, say I got 7 out of 9, John got 6 out of 9. See what you can get.
If you want to take part in that quiz, go to failingwriterspodcast.com, click on the blog, and there you will find a link to our little online quiz.
Yeah.
And you could win your very own League of the Lexicon game in time for Christmas.
Yeah, you don't have to be top scorer or anything. I think you just have to take part.
Yeah. I think the highest, generally the highest scores will go into a draw.
Oh, is that how it
works?
The
winner gets a copy, yeah.
Can everyone everyone just go? Even stupid people should be allowed to get it too, John.
Well, even stupid people might get some of the... It's multiple choice, so...
I suppose a stupid person would get probably 6 out of 9, wouldn't they? And then the rest kind of splits from there. And if you get more than that, you're in the top echelons, I would say.
So, yeah, get clicking. Get clicking. And we will see you next episode in a couple of weeks' time when we finally will get to speak to fantasy, sci-fi and horror comics writer Alec Worley. We promise.
Absolutely. Definitely. Yeah. Promise. Unless something better comes up. Yeah, we definitely will.
Exactly.
So thanks for listening. Remember to like, subscribe, review, tell friends, etc. And we will... See you next time out.
Yeah. Take care.
Hello.
Where's everybody gone?